This is GovExec Daily, where we bring in the federal stories that really matter. It's August 2nd, 2022. I'm Ross John Fortuna. In the last few election cycles, the concern about election security has spanned different parts of the election system. Cybersecurity and phishing attacks were a concern that reached the highest levels of the federal government, while disinformation was rampant throughout the broader cultural conversation. But the disruption of the people who help administer elections has been the latest security threat to the democratic process. As the January 6th committee hearings have shown, threats against election officials were nearly endemic in the wake of the 2020 election. Georgia election worker Shay Moss testified in front of the committee recently, recounting the violent, racist threats that she and her mother received, culminating with their going into hiding after the 2020 election.
A lot of threats, wishing death upon me, telling me that, you know, I'll be in jail with my mother, and saying things like, be glad it's 2020 and not 1920.
Were a lot of these threats and vile comments racist in nature?
A lot of them were racist. A lot of them were just hateful.
Last year, the U.S. Department of Justice established an election threats task force to address the rise in threats against election workers, officials, administrators, and others associated with the democratic process. Late last month, the Alliance for Securing Democracy put out a paper reflecting on the ways the task force can better protect election workers at all levels. David Levine is the Elections Integrity Fellow at the Alliance for Securing Democracy. He's also one of the authors of the report headlined Deterring Threats to Election Workers, Recommendations for the Department of Justice's Election Threats Task Force. After a short break, he'll join me to discuss the efforts to subvert the administration of U.S. elections.
GMARC-U, a collaborative community-based platform for knowledge sharing and skills development. Bringing you together at cutting-edge, highly interactive events, including our premier conference, GAIN. Grow, accelerate, innovate, and network. Join the marketplace of knowledge. Learn, connect, insights at GMARC-U.com.
It's been nearly a year since the Department of Justice established an elections threats task force to address the rise in threats against election workers, administrators, and other officials associated with the electoral process. As the world saw during the January 6th hearings, poll workers like Ruby Freeman faced dire threats and bogus claims of wrongdoing for simply believing in democracy and helping execute it. Recently, the Alliance for Securing Democracy put out a report headlined Deterring Threats to Election Workers, Recommendations for the Department of Justice's Election Threats Task Force. The report outlines some suggestions for the task force to use to better fight these impending threats. David Levine is the Elections Integrity Fellow at the Alliance for Securing Democracy. He's also one of the authors of the report. He joins me now to discuss the efforts to subvert the administration of U.S. elections and report suggestions to combat them. Welcome back to the show.
Ross, it's great to be here with you.
So we're a little under 2 years since the 2020 election. As I just referenced, you had people like Brad Raffensperger and his family, and certainly lower level election workers like Ruby Freeman. They sort of talked about in the hearings about what they experience. What are the other threats to elections now, a year out of this task force, and within this new election cycle?
Sure. No, Ross, I think that's a great place to start. And to your point, I mean, I think that the witnesses, whether it was Ruby Freeman, Brad Raffensperger, Rusty Bowers, right, from Arizona, Gabrielle Sterling, you know, I think they pretty much, you know, nicely encapsulated. But just to give folks a little broader sense, you know, since 2020, we've seen a tsunami, right, a vicious harassment targeting election workers and officials. that may be amongst the most lasting and damaging impacts, right, of former President Trump's efforts to overturn 2020. And, you know, I think the harassment against workers has included death threats, sexual and racist attacks against election workers and officials, as well as their family members. And, you know, we've seen these things come in a whole host of forms, right? Not only have we seen physical threats, but we've, of course, seen threats that either with the intention or with the effect of, you know, raising the stakes on a person's employment, well-being, or maybe inclusion with regards to a particular political party. And so, you know, you gave a couple, but I'll just give you just a couple more examples. You know, you touched on a few of the folks at the January 6th hearing. Arizona House Speaker Rusty Bowers, who declined to support Trump's false claims that the former president had won Arizona's electoral votes, right, now spends his weekends on a routine basis with supporters of the former president's lies, with supporters of the former president's lies gathered in front of him. Those folks threaten his neighbors and play videos proclaiming him to be, among other things, a pedophile, a pervert, and a corrupt politician. You know, you mentioned, of course, Shay Moss, and I think it's really worth noting, just to provide it in a little more detail, that for Ms. Moss and Ruby Freeman, you know, what we've seen there for them is that, you know, not only, of course, were they threatened, and falsely threatened with trying to sabotage the 2020 election. They were, at least one, if not both of them, were advised by the FBI to go into hiding. You know, their lives have been upended. That's affected their work. That's affected their well-being. That's affected the ability to be themselves. And I think, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but I think we expect our leaders to be able to protect all of us, right? Not target one of us. And so, you know, death threats, threats of bodily harm, racist attacks, sexualized attacks, and more is what we've seen. And we continue to see in elections. We do know that, you know, in following New Mexico's primary election recently, when we saw a couple of local election officials in Otero County try and stop the legitimate certification of results, the New Mexico Secretary of State correctly interceded and persuaded the Supreme Court to force, in effect, those county commissioners to certify the results, but not without also receiving threats to herself in the process. And so, you know, these things, unfortunately, continue to be with us.
So the DOJ task force, I guess this gets to the heart of your report. What is it doing and what should it be doing?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you touched on it, but just to sort of build out from that a little bit, that this task force, of course, launched in 2021. And again, it was to address the rise in threats against folks involved in the election process, including poll workers, election administrators, and others that you touched on. And this task force leads the Justice Department's efforts to address threats of violence against election workers and to make sure or help ensure that election workers are permitted to do their job, right, free of threats and intimidation, right? And what this task force does and has continued to do over the past year plus is to receive and assess allegations and reports of threats against election workers. And they, of course, this task force also partners with and supports U.S. attorney's offices and FBI field offices throughout the country to investigate and prosecute those offices where appropriate. It's organized and led by the Deputy Attorney General. It includes several entities within the Department of Justice, including the Criminal Civil Rights and National Security Divisions, as well as the FBI and Department of Homeland Security. And to be fair, right, the DOJ has begun to make some progress, and for that, it deserves to be applauded. You know, the concern that me and my co-authors point out in the report is that it's the progress, well, you know, important to pat on the back, has been, in our view, and in the view of many, too slow. And as of late June, you know, out of more than 1,000 cases that the Justice Department had evaluated, at that point, the DOJ had secured one guilty plea and was prosecuting two cases. And, you know, even those election officials that seem confident, and there are many that seem confident that DOJ is reviewing these threats, the failure to take action against many of them, right? And in some cases, the lack of transparency leads folks to question the efficacy of the task force and whether it can make a dent in stopping this epidemic of violent threats. And so, you know, we think you know, we think that in order for the DOJ to be able to live up to what this task force set out to do, that there needs to be some additional things it needs to do. And so in a paper written again by folks at my organization, as well as the Bipartisan Policy Center, you know, we called for the task force to release a guidance document that offers more clarity on when a threat against an election official is prosecutable, right? That can help, frankly, direct the limited law enforcement resources we have to offer ideas for how to improve the safety of election workers, regardless of whether that prosecution is possible, and to, of course, provide reassurance that the issues of threats remains a DOJ priority. And, you know, those are sort of, I'm happy to go more into it, but those are sort of the three components that we really honed in on in this paper.
Elections are administered locally. That's something I think a lot of people got some education on over the last 6 or 7 years, particularly when it comes to things like secretaries of states in places like Georgia and Arizona and other states. The feds don't have a hand in elections necessarily that's guiding or particularly strong. So how much should the task force address the coordination between feds and local election officials, and where are the choke points there? Can you sort of talk about, I guess, you know, that relationship and what that means to security?
Yeah, no, I think to step back, Ross, I think you're right. I mean, one of the things that's important is that while the feds have been playing a stronger role in helping protect our elections, particularly since, you know, Russian efforts to interfere in the 2016 U.S. elections. You know, at that point, we recognized that there were adversaries, right? Other nation states trying to interfere in our processes and asking state and local election officials to bear the burden of protecting elections against, right, sophisticated adversaries was simply not possible. And so the result is we've seen federal entities, agencies like the Department of Homeland Security and Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency and the FBI and others help them. But to your point, you know, much of what they do is guidance, and much of it is voluntary. And so, you know, I think what's important here is when we look at election worker threats, you know, I think that state and local election officials often have to wear many hats. During the pandemic, they had to be public health officials. Since 2016, they've had to be cybersecurity experts, right, in terms of doing two-factor authentication and doing cyber assessments on their systems. We've seen them have to be, right, you know, public administration officials at times, right, election lawyers dealing with, you know, complex arcane election issues, law issues. And, you know, I think one of the things that can be really helpful to election officials as they deal with the multitude of challenges is to have a body of people, right, who have greater expertise lending a hand in providing ideas. And so, you know, one of the things that we talk about in this paper is that the DOJ could create a one-stop shop that provides resources on how to better protect election workers. The DOJ is providing something similar to cops across the country. They did a few months ago to help cops that are, you know, as police departments across the country look at how to sort of, you know, better in some cases better interact with their communities. And these one-stop shops can be resources on, you know, how to better protect election officials, what sorts of security provisions can be in place. And, you know, you can be able to bring in resources, not only from law enforcement, you know, or even election officials, but civil society organizations, civil rights organizations, academics, and others. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of latitude here. I think it's also worth noting that, you know, right now DOJ is focused, understandably so, on prosecution. And as they should be, but I think a couple of things are worth noting. Number one is that because of the First Amendment, there is some complexity around this. And I think it's important for the DOJ to be providing greater clarity to law enforcement and others about what kinds of cases are going to be easier potentially or have a better chance of being prosecutable. Now, we still want everybody to report threats. I want to be very clear about that. But, you know, part of this is clarifying for non-attorneys and others, right? What are the most, what cases are the most prosecutable? And then for those that may be harder to prosecute, what other options exist? And the DOJ, you know, has some experience and expertise on its task force on this, right? They could provide guidance to state legislatures, we think, to Congress and to others around, you know, what civil suits and what kinds of civil liability you might be able to use, measures you might be able to impose upon those who put out threats. You know, obviously, if people threaten election officials, you know, when we can, we want to make sure that those folks are criminally punished. But, you know, significant fines aren't a bad deterrent either. And so I think there's a real place for the Justice Department. And I think the third thing that I think is really important to note is that, you know, we've seen the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency really step up since 2016 and focus, work with election officials on how to deal with cyber threats, right? And physical security threats. That's the, you know, cyber infrastructure, physical infrastructure. But when we talk about human infrastructure, you know, the Department of Justice really does have as part of its mission the ability to protect both foreign and domestic adversaries. And we think that this challenge with regards to election workers falls straight in their bailiwick.
Yeah, I would certainly say that that human infrastructure is, I don't want to say forgotten, but it is certainly important to remember that, that's a way to hack this system, such as it were, because if you just, and there have been reports of this in places like Michigan, if one of the other parties stacks poll workers with its, let's say, activists, a lot of sort of chicanery can come down, because a lot of the rules about challenging ballots are depending on the jurisdiction. And I say this again as very much a layman, but they do seem to be cut a real wide berth. So you can really, like I said, have a lot of chicanery. So that the idea that the people who do want to help get sort of, there's chilling effect on that for sort of upstanding citizens who just kind of believe in democracy. That seems like a real threat, certainly on par with, you know, people who don't know if two-factor authentication or USB drives or whatever the sort of cyber side of it is.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely right. A chicanery is a good word for it. I mean, it's really worth, you know, I mean, it is important to note that the task force can help protect, right, election workers and ensure the safety of these people as they're doing their duties. But to your point, I mean, this isn't just about protecting them, it's about protecting democracy. We have seen an unprecedented exodus of election officials since the 2020 election, right? At a recent hearing, Liz Howard from the Brennan Center talked about the number of new election officials serving in Georgia and Arizona. There have been lots of reports about the number of election officials that are left in Pennsylvania. And you don't just immediately replace all of that experience, right? At best, you're going to get people who step in who are well-intended but don't have that expertise and are likely to make mistakes that bad faith actors could use to further undermine confidence in the election process. At worst, you could have scenarios, whether it's election workers or administrators, where you get bad faith actors to come and fill in, and you have a bigger problem, which is something you were tacitly sort of suggesting. So, you know, I think it's fair to say that what the task force is doing is nothing short of helping prevent or helping protect democracy and preventing, right, preventing our democracy from sliding right into autocracy. And so I think this is really paramount, this effort. And it's part of the reason why, you know, we put this paper, we did this paper now. The DOJ has had a year to do this, right? They've got their feet under them. They're beginning to prosecute cases. But we really feel that if we're gonna, you know, if some of our best election workers, poll workers, and some of our best election officials are going to stay in this game, that they need to feel that they've got adequate protection. And part of this is by having an active task force that has their back. And we hope that these recommendations can help move the needle there.
So we'll end on this, just the general bird's eye view. Obviously, you follow this in ways that our listeners don't, and certainly that I don't, but we do see a lot of officials questioning elections, candidates do it. There seems, from my little analyst hat perch, that there has been this trickle-down effect from the former president to local candidates for state legislators and stuff, that even when there is above board elections with no issues or fraud, they may still claim that. Is this just how it is now? Are we going to keep seeing this? How can we sort of buttress against that kind of bad faith election questioning?
Yeah, sure. No, I think that's a really important question. And unfortunately, you know, for you and your listeners, I think for at least the near term, we're going to continue to see more of this. And, you know, I think we're going to continue to see more of this until one, there are greater consequences for people who you know, incite mobs, you know, to attack the U.S. Capitol or to attack election officials. I think until there are greater punishments and sanctions against all of the attorneys that brought frivolous lawsuits, right, with regards to the 2020 election, we're going to see that. And until, you know, politicians face consequences for engaging in this kind of rhetoric, we're going to see that as well. And so, you know, I think it's really important that, you know, voters, you know, are making sure to cast their ballots and that this issue is front and center. You know, if an elected official can't tell the difference between a legitimate election and a farcical one, they ought not to serve in public office. And one way, of course, that voters, you know, can hold them accountable is to vote them out of office. But I think, you know, I think until we begin to see greater accountability, this is something we're likely to see, you know, at least in the near term. And I think, you know, it's incumbent upon all of us to make sure that we're voting. And of course, when I say all of us, I mean those who understand and know better, make sure we're voting and figuring out ways to help bolster our democratic process, whether that's serving as a poll worker, observing the election process ourselves and reporting out what's actually going on, not spreading mis, dis, or malinformation about the process, and looking to push and promote legislation or other actions that can bolster, right, our elections. Whether it's the, you know, legislation that we saw recently passed in Colorado to deal with insider threats, or frankly, some of the, you know, the directive that the Republican Ohio Secretary of State recently put out to help bolster their election infrastructure. You know, there continues to be good work done by election officials across the political spectrum. And, you know, the vast majority of them continue to do good work, and we need to continue providing our support to them. Because if we don't, we could see a scenario where folks who aren't as well-meaning are the ones who are in charge of our elections, and then we're in a much more difficult place.
Yeah, it's hard to sort of fathom this, how much this sort of backsliding has become part of the norm in our process and how quickly it's done. That may just be getting older and the pandemic sort of flattening time out, but the healthy skepticism that many of us have had now curdling into this is deeply frightening. And so hopefully we can, you know, via voting and be the kind of necessary public leaders to bring back that sort of faith in the system, such as it were, and faith in democracy.
And I'll just add, you know, to try and be a little more optimistic, you know, I want to underscore that people can make a difference, right? I mean, the Senate right now, of course, is looking at fixes to the Electoral Count Act. They're by no means a panacea for all that ails our elections. But the proposal that is now that being worked on in the Senate would help shore up some of the vulnerabilities that were attempted to be exploited, right, in the 2020 presidential election. We've now recently seen some efforts in both the Senate and the House to introduce appropriations, right, for election funding. Is it as much funding as I or many would like? Of course not. But did that amount of funding, right, $400 million, does that help bolster our election infrastructure and deal with domestic and foreign threats? Absolutely. And so, you know, it's really important. I think it's, you know, when people are feeling down and out, and that would be understandable, I do think it's important to lick your wounds. I do think it's important, right, to have that opportunity to go, right, and let it all out. But then you got to come back and you got to fight. And I mean that in the metaphorical sense, of course. You've got to be able to, right, do your bit to help protect, right? And whether it's voting, whether it's being a poll worker, whether it's promoting legislation, you know, to help protect our election officials or our election processes, every bit, little bit counts. And frankly, every little bit is needed right now.
Yes, for sure. And that's all, it is always, again, I've said this to frequent guest Lindy Kaiser and GovExec contributor, that it's good to have someone be the ray of sunshine against my dark cloud about all this stuff I've certainly not the sunniest cat when it comes to all of this stuff. So, David, thanks so much for being on the show with us.
Ross, thanks again for having me.
Thanks for listening to GovExec Daily. Our show was produced by Adam Butler and hosted by me, Ross Opportunity. We want to thank David Levine for joining the program. Our music is the song Signals by Catfish Dancing. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts. You can email us any feedback at podcast@govexec.com or hit us up on Twitter @govexec. We'd love to hear from you. We'll talk to you later.